Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
And we said, let there be podcasts. And there were podcasts. So, this is a bit of a clandestine operation we got going here. We're in my basement. This week, I have two of my friends here. Kevin Goff. Say hello, Kevin.
Hello.
And Rob Gates.
Hello, Jim.
And my name is Jim Lenihan. And the reason this is clandestine is because we are going to talk all week about a band that my co-host doesn't particularly like. That, to put it probably nicely, charitably. So, he's out of town. This is great. The three of us can get together and talk about this band, all right? So
do we have to whisper?
It might help. It might help. I don't know. Probably not. I think we're okay. I don't think he can hear us all the way in Wisconsin, right. So we're fine. Now, the band we're going to talk about here on Rock in the Suburbs is Who? Not the Who. Who is it?
Genesis.
Genesis, right. And you, Kevin, are a particularly big Genesis fan, right?
So, I am.
So tell us first off, how did that fandom develop?
Well, I would say that it was around the time that Misunderstanding, that might have been the first song I heard, but it didn't, you know, I just remember hearing it on the radio way back when, 1980. I think it was at my cousin's house. And I thought that was a brand new band at that time, right?
Right.
So, but at some point in that year, I bought Three Sides Live, and that just set it off for me. From that point on.
Okay. And Rob, are you a particular Genesis fan?
I am. I don't think nearly as much as Kevin is. I'd probably consider myself more of a populist Genesis fan, in that I probably represent the general public's fandom of Genesis. Does that make sense?
Meaning sort of like you know the popular songs.
I know the popular songs. I know a bit about the band. I am a fan of some of the earlier stuff, pre-Phil Collins or pre-Kevin's Discovery. So some of the Peter Gabriel stuff going back. But in general, I would say probably, you know, the stuff that was played on the radio a lot. And a few deeper tracks. I mean, I own several albums, so.
I am probably with you on this. I did not know a lot about the band before I did some sort of cramming earlier today based on Kevin's notes and some of my own research. You know, of course, I knew the hit songs in the 80s. I had the Abacab album and Three Sides Live. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I also had the one that was just called Genesis at some point, too. But that was it. I think those were the only ones I had. But I did have one friend who had some of their older stuff, and I think he, at the time, sort of tried to get me into it, but it didn't really take. To be honest, I was never really into prog rock stuff at all. Mm-hmm. In that era, probably the closest I would have come back then would have been like Asia, but that was pretty much a pop band, you know, prog rock sort of dressed up as a pop band, right? So, I liked, you know, I was more of a top 40 kind of kid at this time when this came out. It was when that era of Genesis when I was in high school, and so this, like, kind of like you were saying, the stuff that was on the radio, which they did actually develop into like a hit-making machine. Yes, that was the stuff I knew, right? And then, of course, you had Phil Collins solo. And then later, well, you admitted this to me as well, later learning that Peter Gabriel was even in the band because I knew Peter Gabriel from MTV and like Shock the Monkey and that stuff, right? And that was kind of mind-blowing.
I would say it was even like Sledgehammer was a song, and I must have heard somewhere in there that the former lead singer of Genesis, and I was like, what? But that did give me a whole like sort of exploration, because I was what brought me into Genesis at the time was the drums. I was learning how to play drums at the time.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And so Phil Collins drumming, you know, still one of my favorites. So
he had a distinct style as a drummer, right?
It's the fills. The Phil.
Yeah. So in this first episode, we're going to kind of do an overview.
Right.
Right. And then as the week goes on, we're going to do sort of deeper dives into certain periods or styles of Genesis music, right?
That's right.
Okay, so you, Kevin, you put together a playlist here. So we're going to start with Silent Sun. Is that right? And now, was this their first
single? Yeah, this is the first single they ever had from the album Genesis to From Genesis to Revelation.
Right.
It came out in 1969.
Which shocked me. I had no idea they went back to the 60s. Like, I thought maybe mid-70s. Like, no, it's,
a lot of people,
I had no idea.
Yeah, a lot of people don't even consider it a Genesis album.
Okay.
Wait till you hear it. I don't want to ruin it, but yeah. So.
Okay, and by the way, to the listeners, if you hear any disturbances in the background, that's just the puppy. Might hear him right there. Okay. All right. Genesis, Silent Sun.
The silent sun that never shines. She is the warmth of my lonely heart. The motion of a turning wheel. Can't you stop it and look her? Chills the sea. Can't you feel in your useless pride?
So the only thing I could think of during that song was the scene in Spinal Tap where they show the early band playing Listen to What the Flower People Say.
Yeah, that's right.
And I can't believe that that's Genesis.
Right.
Correct.
And also, it's funny you mentioned a movie because I was thinking to myself, like, that would be like, if you ask the band, like, write a song for this movie that's set in the late 60s, you know what I mean? Yep. Like do something in that style. It sounds so of that time, so completely.
By the way, not a British bad too. Song.
No,
not at all. My mind went right to, like, the Moody Blues, but as I was reading about it and trying to go backwards, it's the Bee Gees.
Yes. So what a lot of people forget, if they only know the Bee Gees from the disco era, is that they started as a folk band. And if you go back and listen to some of that stuff, it's a lot different than Staying Alive in those songs. And yeah, I think you can hear it here. I read that same thing today too. I also read that the strings were added after the band recorded this album, and they didn't know anything about it until it was released, and they were upset by those string arrangements being inserted in there.
That could be related to the fact that they don't actually own the music. They signed the rights away to it to their manager. I forget his name, Jonathan something, but Jonathan King, I think, was his name.
I think
name.
That's right.
Yeah. So he still owns the rights to that song. They actually signed with Charisma Records after this one. But that's...
And they were very, very young, right? Weren't they like teenagers or something?
Yeah, they had met at Charterhouse School. Peter Gabriel, Michael Rutherford, Tony Banks, and Anthony Phillips, I think, was the other one. They had met at school and had started performing together there. But I believe they were teenagers. They were probably 18. It might be the oldest they were.
Right.
Yeah. At the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other bit of trivia I read about this too, which I found was hilarious, is they blame part of the reason why it didn't sell. Did you read this thing?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. So after they recorded the album, they learned that there was another band called Genesis, an American band. And so the management got into a thing with them, and they worked out a deal where they could put the album out. They could still be called Genesis. They could put the album out in the UK, but they could not put their name or, like, officially have their name on the album cover. So it was called From Genesis to Revelation, but that's the album title.
Right.
It's not the, so, and then the album cover is just like black with this sort of like gold lettering on it, sort of very small. So apparently they claim that a lot of record stores in the UK filed it in the religious section of the store, thinking that's what the record was. And so they blame that in part, I guess, on low sales.
Yes. So black album, like Spinal Tap, Smell the Glove.
That's right.
It fits.
It does.
Yes. All right. So Kevin, for this episode, we're not going to go album by album, but we're just going to sort of play some songs that reflect different periods or styles, right? So what would be the next thing we should highlight here?
Yeah, we'll get deeper into it as we go throughout the week.
But, yeah.
So, you know, short few months after From Genesis to Revelation came out, they started recording Trespass, their second album, or if you're a true Genesis fan, that might be your first. But it only has 6 songs on it. So they're all very long and
the mark of any good prog rock band.
Exactly. And standing out from it is a song that they were still playing until very much later in their career, called The Knife, that clocks in at about 8 minutes 55 seconds. But I don't think the album did very much. In fact, it peaked number 98 in the UK, and so they still didn't really have any huge following at that point. But as people started getting more interested in Genesis over the years, this album started to rise to the surface a little bit. But it's really the song about the knife, I think, that carried through from this song and into the others.
So that album was sort of the beginning of the true Genesis prog rock band, right? That was like their early sound.
They'd signed with that label, Charisma, at that point, that they carried them through at least the next 5-6 albums.
Okay.
So, yeah, definitely this would have been the first that they developed their sound.
Okay. So what song would be a good representation of the early, true early Genesis sound?
Yeah, you can go with Watcher of the Skies. That one is still played to this, you know, up until the later days when they were traveling. At least they would do medleys of it. You would hear portions of it.
All right. So we're going to go in a little bit into this song. It's Watcher of the Skies. There's a lot in that couple of minutes that we played there.
Yeah, and it goes on. You're missing about 7 minutes of it. So you should go back and listen to it when you're when you have time to kind of digest it. But one thing you may have noticed is the drumming. At this point, Phil Collins was in the band. He wasn't the original drummer. They had John Mayhew, and they had one other drummer, Chris Stewart, before that. And we'll get into sort of the history of that later, but you can start to hear that a more cohesive sound too, because by now Steve Hackett was also in the band, as guitarist in the band. So this lineup that you're hearing in this song kind of carried it throughout until Peter Gabriel left.
This is sort of the classic early Genesis lineup, right? That they definitely have here. Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I said, this song stands out. And funny, when I was talking to Rob about this a little bit before, every year there's a band that's touring the country called the Musical Box that they go not around the country, around the world, actually. They're well known. But they're a tribute band, which no matter what you feel about tribute bands, I have rules. The bands that I'll never have a chance to see, it's probably okay. I can justify it, right?
Yeah.
But I've seen them 3 times, and I've watched them perform this how Genesis, like, they get into the overalls that Phil Collins was wearing, and they set the stage up exactly the same. So if you're watching the video on YouTube, There is a video up there that I'd encourage if you're a fan and you haven't seen it, but it's early performances with this lineup here, and you get to see how the visuals were pretty important to Peter Gabriel and all that. So don't want to ruin like the week. We'll get into that in more detail too, but this is kind of where that started.
Okay.
In that period. So we still hadn't gotten a hit out of this band that I know of. You know, we're getting close to where they did.
Okay.
It was actually the next one, Still in England by the Pound, which I think that a lot of people consider to be their the best album that that Genesis did with Peter Gabriel, and maybe ever.
Okay.
So, but Selling England by the Pound actually had a song on it called I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe that got radio airplay. I don't know if anybody would call it a hit, but kind of that was the first song they put together that was radio friendly, I guess.
Okay. So. And this was around the period, I think you started to allude to, where Peter Gabriel was starting to dress up in costumes and yes. things like that. And I read that really got a lot of attention.
Yes.
And that was a key to them getting a lot of media attention, a lot of write-ups, things like that. And they became instantly sort of more successful from that moment on.
That's correct. Yeah. There was a show they were playing in Ireland, and Peter hadn't informed the rest of the band, but he was out having somebody make that costume from Foxtrot, the cover of the album. If you go look at that album, it's the one that Watcher of the Skies was on. It has the fox head and a red dress, which happened to be from Peter Gabriel's, his wife's wardrobe, he called it, I guess, or cupboard, he called it. But so he had this costume made, and he just came out in it, hadn't told the band before. And so when you read interviews from like Mike Rutherford and from like Phil Collins, it's like, what was that like? Did you guys like have a discussion? He's like, no, if he had discussed it, we wouldn't have let him do it. And they got a reaction from it that was pretty positive. It got them in Melody Maker, and then he started wearing other different kinds of costumes in different places, and
right.
that just became kind of the thing.
So. Okay. So then the last album that Peter Gabriel did with Genesis was The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway,
correct.
Right? And mm-hmm. that was what year?
That was 1975?
74, I
Four.
Guess,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what would be a good song to play off of that?
Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. Was a concept album, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway?
Yeah, and the concept we could probably talk about for days.
So
maybe some of the fans are listening to the show could help us out with that one too, kind of the point of it. But
well, I hope that one of the guys that was on my freshman dorm floor in college is listening, because this was he would turn this into an event. He would go around. He'd say, "Hey, we're going to do the Lamb. Everyone, Saturday night, we're doing the Lamb." Now, first time I heard this, I didn't know what he was talking. Like bringing farm animals. They're like, "What's going on?" It's like, "No, gotta come, man. We're going to do the Lamb. It's going to be awesome." And we all crammed into his room, and, you know, into the cassette deck goes The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Yep.
He just listened to the whole album.
Yep.
Was there anything else you would do while listening to that album?
they would do lots of things. I would just sit there mesmerized that this was an event.
Yes.
Yes. That we were doing The Lamb. Like, I'm doing The Lamb. Like, I'm a freshman in college. I'm doing The Lamb. This is awesome.
I mean, I think a lot of this prog rock sort of stuff lends itself to that kind of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
People who think...
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who think they're intellectually minded, right, and can appreciate... This kind of music, right?
It's true. This album did really well for them. They toured on the whole thing, but it was the actual last album that Peter Gabriel recorded with them.
Right. And we'll get into that tomorrow. Yeah, we go deeper into the Peter Gabriel years. Fast forward a bit. They did another album with Steve Hackett, right? And then he left, or were there two? I think there were two more.
There were two.
And then he left
right, to
pursue a solo career. And then there were three, which was also the name of the album.
Exactly.
And that's when they really started to become more like the hit makers that people know Genesis to be.
You know, in that time period, they had, you have to kind of talk about, and we can talk about Phil Collins when you hear the transition of him coming in, but they really struggled with what to do after that band. And then the decision to just put Phil Collins up in the front kind of came very quickly.
Let's skip ahead, because we're going to go, I think, Wednesday deeper into the Phil Collins years. But let's just skip ahead to give people sense.
Definitely.
You probably have heard this song before, but sort of the classic Genesis Phil Collins sound, right?
Perfect.
So the first thing I want to say about Abacab is I have to correct a statement I made on a previous episode with the three of us where we played this before. Remember when we did the classic rock in the 80s?
Yeah.
We were comparing different bands from like the 70s, what they sounded like in the 70s, what they sounded like in the 80s. And we played this and I misspoke. I said the name of the song Abacab came from the chords in the song. It's not it. It's the structure of the song. So there's the A segment, the B segment, then goes back to the A, then the C, then the A and the B. That's what it is.
Did you try to play it on guitar and it wasn't working?
That's right. So, it's funny because after I said that, I thought like, that doesn't really make sense. Like what little I know about chord progressions, like that doesn't really make sense. A, B, A, C. Like anyway, so I looked it up and that's what it was. And that makes way more sense. When you write a song, some have, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, you know, whatever. So that's kind of what this is. A is the verse, B is the chorus, then it goes back to the verse, then it goes to the bridge, you know. So anyway, there.
Interesting thing, I have an alternate recording of this entire album, and it's called the Abacab Second Edition or something, and it's a bootleg, I think, that goes out to other people, but it's exactly the same album in exactly the same order, but every song title is different. And I can't recall what Abacab's name, but we can look that up and give it later in the week. But
so you don't remember, you don't recall.
I don't recall.
So good one. But it's funny that they not only named it that based on, I guess, somewhere during the writing of the song that just came up, but then they made it a word.
Right.
I mean, that is like, you know, abacab. Like, what is that? It doesn't really, it's nonsensical. It doesn't really mean anything.
I've often wondered if this is kind of a pairing song to In the Air Tonight from a subject matter of, you know, from Phil Collins' solo career, because it also came out about the same time. I've never tried to look that up to see, but if you look at sort of what it's, don't you think I'd find out, that kind of thing.
So this is 1981. Yeah, yeah, it was right around the same time, right?
It'd be a good thing to explore. Maybe somebody can correct us.
The other thing that's very noticeable here, and I don't think it's true on the whole Abacab album, but in this song in particular, I mean, this is FM rock radio friendly. They're not doing anything with like weird time signatures or any of that stuff. It is four on the floor drumming. Yep. It is very basic. And it sounds like, a, you know, what we think of as like a classic rock song, right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, it kind of progressed nicely. You know, the album before this one, Duke, actually, which I consider one of my favorites, actually. You can hear a lot of that same stuff too, but you also hear some of the older Genesis stuff in there. Most of the songs on Abacab are kind of lighter and kind of fun little tunes with the introduction of horns and things like that. But so
then they kind of, if they started in sort of prog rock, if you're not counting that first album, if they started sort of prog rock and then went into this kind of like FM radio rock kind of thing, then they went into more like pop music, like, definitely, you know. And so for the next album, here's a good example of that.
Just as I thought it was going all right, I found out I'm wrong when I thought it was right. It's always the same, it's just a shame, that's all. I could say day and you'd say night, tell me it's black when I know that it's white. Always the same, it's just a shame, and that's all.
They are so far away from prog rock at that point, right?
Yeah, I don't know what led them to that, but you know, I have to think that's mostly Phil Collins' influence there.
Well, you know, to me, that whole period, the whole Phil Collins period, is the fundamental sound does not change. That song could have been on two albums prior to Abacab, mm-hmm. as opposed to after Abacab. And Kevin and I talk about Genesis quite a bit, and I'm always mixing up the catalog where songs go in the order, which is unusual because usually with bands, you know which, mm-hmm. you know, which era of the band it was, and you can sort of fit the album in there. But at Genesis, I have a really tough time doing that.
No, and you raise a good point, because even though I was basically saying they went kind of like FM rock into like pop, they really were already, when they were doing Abacab and stuff like that, they were already doing these kind of lighter pop songs, because Misunderstanding was before. Yeah,
that was on Duke.
Right.
And then
Follow You, Follow Me was like their first big hit, yes, right? And that exactly. was from the, and then and there were three.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And the horns one, No Reply At All off of Abacab.
Well, that's really interesting. And I would like to get into that when we do that period, because I saw that. All right. We got to wrap this one up. So we saved a special song for the for the play out. Okay, so we'll get to that in a second here. Tomorrow we're going to go a little bit deeper into the specifically the Peter Gabriel years, which is going to be an education for me, because I don't know that much about this. Great. This is be good. All right. Of course, we would love to hear any listener thoughts on Genesis. You can call 612-440-1984. Very good. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. All those with the handle suburbspod. All right. Thanks, guys, for coming over. We're going to have a sleepover tonight, and then we'll be back tomorrow. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Rob Gates.
Kevin Goff.
And we're going to leave you with Genesis' number one hit song from 1986. I don't even have to say what it is. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Live Aid, playing in England, jetting across the Atlantic.